Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them at 4191A Manchester Avenue, right over there in the heart of the Grove, between the demo and the ready room. They come out this Friday, July 1st. They have an all new music happy hour going on. They'll have vinyl spinning, 10% off any purchase, free four hands beer. For those of age and new vinyl in from Thursday, Oasis, Melvins, Evolution, Blink 182, The Monkees, Ringo Starr, Of Mice and Men, and much, much more. Hey, and also be sure to check out their always growing local music selection. Tons of your favorites from around town are on there, tapes, CDs, and vinyl. So you can find all this information and more on musicrecordshop.com. Follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hey, this is comedian Mikey Mecker. You're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out at the Westport Funny Bone with Mikey Manker.
Hi, what how are you guys?
Show, man.
It's good to be. I have not been in this. We're actually in the sidebar. What's it called?
Backstreet Blues and Jazz.
Yeah, so there is a bar next to the Funny Bone called the Backstreet Bar Blues and Jazz Lounge, yeah. And I haven't been in this. I literally have not been in here in probably 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's changed at all.
So, no, it's the exact same. Yeah. It's the same same layout. I think the candles are still lit from right. Last time I was here. So, yeah.
But yeah, man, I appreciate you doing this. You just jumped up on the open mic tonight. And,
I wanted to get it set in, so yeah. It was fun, man. It was cool.
Yeah, I've been trying to do a lot of these with a lot of the guys. Local comics and things. I've been trying to help support all my friends around town.
And you know, something I really like about you, and I'm going to talk right now, is I really like how you, if you don't follow Shane on Facebook, if you're from St. Louis, follow Shane, because he will post, like every weekend, he'll post like 10 things, like what's happening in the local, either rock or comedy scene, right?
There's been some that is like up to 40 shows on a Friday night or something like that.
So how do you find this information? Do you go like on the RFT?
I borrow some from them, obviously, or what I check their list if anything I miss, but a lot of it's like I'll scroll through for the day or whatever, and I'll see people, hey, I'm playing here tonight, and I'll add to my list, and then I'll go through and I RSVP to anything, all the events I see there,
right?
So I try to of a couple different sources I pull and I put it all together,
and what's great about it is like a lot of the time people on Facebook will post just stuff about themselves.
Yeah,
it's very Facebook is very like internal, kind of like self-promoting thing, but you actually promote other people, which is cool, which I really appreciate too.
That's what I'm all about. I'm not that interesting to talk about myself all the time, and
this is a nice mic though. This is a really nice mic for
but that's why I'm all about trying to help all my friends, and that's what this show's about, and I want to try to do something cool for my city, and so that's a lot of it, man.
Are you are you from St. Louis, or are you a transplant?
Yeah, I live in Wentzville.
Just
45 minutes outside of town or whatever.
Oh, very nice.
But yeah, St. Louis has always been home. I've lived here in all my life and in Wentzville, but
we
come down here for all the Cardinals games and everything or whatever. So
nice.
But yeah, so you were originally from, and then now you live in Chicago?
So yeah, I have kind of a crazy travel story. Well, just a crazy story overall. I was born in St. Louis. I was born here 1981, and I believe it was Kirkwood Hospital. That's where I was born. And I lived here until I believe I was 26, I think. So, and then it's kind of a crazy story. I was doing comedy here and doing improv and stand-up and all that. And I was working at a bar, and I was dating the bartender. And it was fantastic, but like, and I've always wanted to live in Chicago. That was my main goal, was to live in Chicago, and I would commute to and from St. Louis, Chicago, to do open mics or do improv shows and all that. And then one day, it was actually in 1 week, the girl I was dating dumped me, and my car broke down within 2 or 3 days.
Right.
So that was, to me, that was a sign from the universe or whatever saying, all right, get the fuck out of St. Louis.
Yeah.
And then I literally moved, I think a week later, I was on a train in Chicago, and one of my good friends at the time, we haven't spoken really, not like a bad, we just lost contact. His name's Joe. He had his couch at the time just open up. So he was like, hey, come crash here. I'm like, fucking, all right. So I packed 2 bags of clothes, I think my cell phone, my charger, my wallet, and I moved to Chicago, and I never looked back.
Huh,
so, yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
It was just a fresh start. And
yeah, it was. I totally started over. Yeah. And that's the crazy thing about comedy. Maybe in music, too. I don't know much about the music scene. But when you're in comedy and you're in one scene and you decide to leave, people don't realize when you get to another place, you're basically starting over from scratch. You have your material, which is great, but you have to make all new friends, go to all the open mics and go up, you know, 30th, 40th, because nobody knows who the fuck you are. So that was the first 2 or 3 years in Chicago was rough. But, you know, I just kept going out and, you know, the nose to the grindstone thing, and eventually it caught on, and it's been great.
Was that around, like, the time, like, Matt Bronger and Ron Funches and all those guys?
You know what? I think, okay, so it's weird. I arrived in Chicago at the exodus of a lot of major comedians moving to L.A. So when I got to Chicago in 07, 06, 07, that's when Matt Bronger left. That's when Kamel left. Kamel Nanjiani left. That's when T.J. Miller left for L.A. That's when I think Kyle Kinane left.
Yeah.
So as I came in, all those heavy hitters were going to L.A. to basically start over again.
Right.
And they've all done great things.
For sure,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We kind of had that here in St. Louis, though, too.
Noticed that, yeah.
With Nikki Glaser and Tommy Johnigan and all these.
They all left. I want to say they left in, like, what, 2008, 2009,
yeah,
or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I'd have to ask them. I have no idea.
Right, but it was just like, I mean, not that, and obviously there's still a lot of great talent, but it's just cool to see that, you know, they've gone out of St. Louis and become very successful in comedy and stuff. So but yeah, it's cool. And Greg Warren is another one.
He was here tonight, by the way.
Yeah. So you're hitting the open mics up there in Chicago then and starting.
Well, so yeah, so when I got there, it was weird because when I got there, I was still, my main focus was on improv because that was my background, was doing improv in St. Louis. And I was studying at the IO, the Improv Olympic, taking improv classes, and then doing some stand-up on the side. Like, every once in a while, I'll go to an open mic. But then I realized quickly that I prefer stand-up more than improv.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I do is because, internally, I'm a very selfless person, like, performance-wise, where I want to be the only person on stage at a time. And I want all the responsibility, whether it's a good show or a bad show, to be on my shoulders. So I got more into stand-up, and I kind of just – I realized that improv was not my thing anymore. So I kind of pushed it aside and got to stand-up, and I was trying to hit 2-3 mics a night, which is difficult when you don't have a car. That's the thing about Chicago is people don't really have cars there. There's cars, but like comedians, maybe I would say 5% have cars, but the rest, you take buses, trains, public transportation, taxis, whatever, to get the mics. So I was doing as many mics as possible, and it was really rough. It was terrible. I mean, because like you would go to mics and at, you know, 1 a.m, and there would be maybe 10 comedians on the mic and maybe 2 audience members, two, like maybe like a bartender was there watching. So, but it kind of pays off in the end because you get that experience of going up in front of nobody and performing like you're performing in front of 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
And that carries over to when you eventually do perform in front of 200 people, you know how to do it. So, yeah. It was, you know.
You ever see that Steve Byrne documentary?
I have not, but a good friend of mine is close friends with Steve Byrne, but I would love to watch it though.
He did it like a Netflix, or I think it might have been before Netflix, might have just did it for like YouTube or something, but now it's on Netflix, I believe. And but it's like he did like I think it did 13 mics in one night in New York.
Oh, that's right. I remember seeing something like that.
Had like laid out like where he was going to be, and you know, some of them are at like, whatever, the cellar and stuff, and then some are restaurants and
some
things,
just, whatever, barbecue houses. I do like that idea. I like the idea of like people trying to, but the problem is there's a difference between if you're gonna try to break a record for, I'm gonna do as many mics as night I can. Like, when you go to them, at least try to like work on something new or try something. Like, don't just go there just to get a number under your belt. I think that's I mean, right. It's cool that, like, oh, I did 14 mics in a night. But, sure. like, if you're not working on something, then what's really the point? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah, I think that was just, obviously, to just something to see if they could do it.
Yeah, yeah. Just something to, like, right. break out, like, a record book right. or something like that. Yeah. So yeah. That's cool, then. That takes, I mean, that's a lot of careful planning. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to, like, and it has to be, like, you have to, I haven't watched documentary, but you have to tell those people who host those mics, hey, I'm trying to do this thing tonight. Can right. you get me in and out as quickly as possible? Because yeah. sometimes it doesn't work like that.
Sure. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It's just interesting. Mm-hmm. But, so who are those guys that, you know, you're watching that you want to inspire you to want to get up there and try that and to be a comic? And
Are you talking like from St. Louis or from, just, you know, yeah. it's weird because people will always talk about, the comedian special that they just watched. Like, yeah. I watched Louis C.K. special. I watched Marie Branford special. I don't watch other comedians special because my problem with that is, I mean, there's certain comedians I like, but, like, I found in the past when I've watched a special from a comedian, 3 or 4 years later, I'll think of a bit mm-hmm. that I didn't know I saw that comedian do that just stayed in the back of my head. So when I'll go write about, I'm like, oh, fuck, I know I've heard this somewhere before. Sure. So I try to disassociate from other comedians.
Yeah.
I love watching my friends do comedy. Like, because that's, like, the bare bone meat and potatoes comedy is, like, watching other people at your level do
yeah.
it. There's a couple guys in Chicago who came up with who are great, who moved on. Like, those guys I talked to you about. And a couple guys in L.A. who are fantastic. But I really like watching the people I'm on that same kind of level with do comedy. Because yeah. we're all struggling. It's not easy. And I like to see how different people approach comedy different ways. If you're watching, there's a comedian in Chicago now. His name is Joe McMahon, and he is one of the funniest people I've ever seen in my life. So yeah. Definitely check him out. If I find a clip, I'll send you a clip so you can post it. But he's really great. So yeah. I tend to watch my friends do comedy besides celebrities.
I think I met a couple of guys came down onto a Firebird, I think, was for a show one night.
Yeah.
It was like Drew Michael.
Oh, Drew's great. He recorded a half-hour special for Comedy Central, which would be – I don't know when it's going to come out, but he did it a couple months ago in New Orleans.
He brought along Mike Leibowitz.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yes, yes.
Very funny guy. And he's just one of those guys, like, too, like, just the character he is with the mustache and everything. He's just funny to look at.
Like, yeah, he's great. It's funny because, like, when these guys like Drew or Lebo or whatever, when they come – like, the audience sees them as a performer. I see them as my friends.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it's funny to watch, like, audiences laugh at my friends doing shit on – because I know these guys. Actually, Drew and I used to live together for a couple years.
All right, very cool.
So – and then Mike's doing great stuff. He's pretty incredible. So
yeah.
I keep thinking of these people who've moved on. Lisa Traeger is also amazing, too. She's another former roommate of mine. But yeah, so yeah.
Is that cool. Kind of the playing to the back of the room and stuff a little bit? You know,
I don't know. I mean, there are a few comedians who I know do jokes for the comedians in the back of the room, and we appreciate that. But it also, I think, it lets the audience know that hey, this isn't as serious as it seems. Like you can laugh at shit, and I think when the audience sees their friends laughing at things, I think that opens them up more to material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been actually if you've ever get the opportunity to sit next to Josh Arnold at an open mic.
Oh, Josh and I have been friends with since 2002. Yeah. So
Josh it immediately makes anything 100% funnier to listening to Josh Arnold laugh at it.
Oh, he's got the best laugh in comedy. He's got one of the best laughs in comedy.
But I saw it with him at an open mic a while back, and he's very encouraging with you know, his laughs.
Oh yeah, he's great. Yeah, he's great.
Even if the joke doesn't land with the audience, like Josh is, you know, rolled over. You know,
yeah, because he knows what's involved in comedy. Sure. He knows how comedy works. He knows that, like, although that joke did not work with that audience, it probably worked with a past audience, and it's just fun to watch it. Josh is great because when I got here tonight to sign up for the open mic, Sean O'Brien, he's a comedian and also bartends at the Funny Bone too. He was like, "Yeah, I live with Josh now." I'm like, "Oh fuck yeah!" And he was like, "Yeah, Josh mentioned some joke he did, and he told me the joke, and I haven't done this joke in probably 5 years." And I was like, "Oh fuck, that's great that Josh reference the joke I've done 5 years ago." Right. So that's a testament to him, how great he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking, you were talking about not like, you know, subconsciously, whatever, borrowing from people or whatever.
Right,
you know,
right,
like
right.
If you watch them and stuff. And I have a similar, like, I always kind of wanted to get into songwriting and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my thing is, like, I listen to a ton of music, but anytime I sit down to write,
yeah,
all that's coming through my mind is all these other song lyrics and.
Right, there's that, and there's, I mean, also on a guitar, there's only so many chords you can play. So it's like, of course, I mean, if I can grab a guitar and strum, you know, D, A, G, and I've written, like Buddy Holly song. So there's only, like, but, no, I definitely get, and you can actually listen to other musicians and be like, oh, that's an old Beatles, like, riff, or that's an old, like, Stones, not the entire riff, but like an old note they used to play.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think things stick with you. But I think that's the idea of art. I think art imitates other art, so I think it kind of evolves from that.
Yeah, they say, with a quote, something like, you know, imitation's the highest form of flattery. Or
Yeah. As long as you're not stealing something word for word or beat for beat, I think you're fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, or claiming that...
claiming that you wrote it.
Right. Yeah, just give credit where credit's due.
Right, and another good... I mean, I'm a huge... This is no stranger to people. I'm a huge Oasis fan.
Yeah.
And one of Oasis's best songs is Don't Look Back in Anger. And that song starts with John Lennon's Imagine, just the piano chords.
Sure.
But then it becomes something entirely different. So, of course, they stole that, but, like, it becomes...
Yeah.
And it's a fucking hit. It's a huge hit.
Yeah. So. Where'd that start for you? Just somebody give you an Oasis?
No, that actually... I was never really a huge Oasis fan back in the 90s whenever they were huge, but I... I'm sorry, burp for that. I was working... In 2001 or two, I got a job waiting tables at the Hard Rock Cafe in Union Station. And at the same time, I was doing improv at a club in Union Station, and I was working there on the side. And they would play, like, music videos. And I remember that they're playing an Oasis song. I think it was, like, Go Let It Out off their fourth album. And I remember, like, really being into the song. I'm like, that's a fucking cool song. And I'm like, oh, that's Oasis? That's a great... And then I just kind of, like, every time that song came on, I would, like, stop and, like, watch the video, and it'd just be kind of, like, steamrolling. I would, like, start buying albums and getting into more of their B-sides, and that was a obsession that still goes to this day, I think 15 years. And I've seen Oasis probably, as a band, before they broke up, maybe 4 or 5 times. I've seen the brothers separately 2 or 3 times each, so, yeah. All it takes is one song. That's all it takes.
For sure, yeah.
And you're hooked.
I had a conversation just through text today with a guy. Happened to listen to a former podcast I did, or a past podcast I did with the guys, and I referenced this band Remedy. They were like a reggae funk kind of band.
Are they like a Black Crowes cover?
Similar name, yeah.
Yeah.
They were. I guess they went to Mizzou and they played up in Columbia a lot. But I saw them one night at Pops, and they opened for the Bad Fish, the Sublime tribute.
Oh yeah. Remember them? Yeah.
Yeah. So they opened for them, and like, but they just kind of hooked me with, like, again, that one song.
It's just all it takes is one song. Yeah. That's, yeah.
And so, like, that was, like, you know, several years ago, and I still listen to that stuff. And then, like, anyway. So I talked about it on a past show, and I get a message from this guy who I've getting to know now because of his new music, and he goes, actually, I was the guitar player in Remedy, like, and I was like, oh, shit.
That's awesome. Small world. Yeah.
So it was just kind of a cool...
That's badass.
...cool moment where I was like, oh, man, that's, you know, so I talked to him about, you know, he obviously heard what I said on that episode about Remedy, and it was just like, so I thought it was kind of funny how it all came full circle today, talking to him and things. And
yeah, is there a band that you... that you love, that you've actually traveled to go see?
I mean, not like too crazy. I mean, I've definitely I saw Alice in Chains at the House of Blues in Chicago.
When was that?
This was like the new Alice. Like, you know,
after Wayne died.
Yeah. This was like just maybe two or three years ago. Something.
Who was there? Was it the guy from Primus who was like the new lead singer or no?
No, they've William Duvall is his name.
Okay.
And he, super talented singer. But I didn't realize, you know, especially with that band, that Jerry Cantrell does a lot of the singing anyway. So like,
oh, he did. I didn't know so that. I thought it was all Lane.
Yeah, cool. I mean, so like, that's what Alice in Chains was, a lot of the harmony, which made him like stand out differently.
Yeah.
So it was Jerry and Lane singing together on
that's
a lot
badass.
Of that. But yeah, I didn't. I was, at the time when I was younger, I was unaware that Jerry sings quite a bit of that stuff anyway.
So. I didn't know that. That's the first I've heard of that. I thought it was all Lane Staley. Is it Lane Stanley or Staley?
Staley.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
But yeah, so I mean, I've gone to Chicago and back for the night for a show. And,
oh, of course, yeah. I've done that.
We actually went up there for the Undateable cast at...
Second City?
No, the was the Vic or what up there?
Yeah, there's the Vic, which is kind of... For those who don't know, the Vic Theater is... I would kind of compare it to maybe... I would say maybe the Pageant.
Yeah.
A little bit more, like, run down, sure. I think. But, like, the Pageant's pretty much... brand new in the scheme of things, but like the Vic's kind of like a pageant place where
it was a nice theater, and we got seated right up front, and then I was Chris D'Elia, Ron Funches,
oh nice,
Rick Glassman, and Brent Morin, and then
oh fuck, how long ago was that?
Just a year ago, no, whatever.
Okay, cool, because I remember I remember Chris played that show. There was somebody from Chicago open for him too. I can't think of that.
Well, that night they brought along the other guy from the show. It was just the Undateable.
Okay.
Thing. So it was I forget his name now, but the guy who plays the gay bartender on the show.
Yeah.
He was the host. It was supposed to be the guy, the producer guy who did Scrubs and all the stuff.
Right.
His name is, but he was supposed to host it. He did the year before, and but he had to cancel, so they brought along the other guy. And it was a great show, man. I was like, especially that was my first time getting to see Ron Funches. And
yeah, he's fantastic.
And Brent Morin and all. I mean, that whole cast is they're all incredible. But it was just so. There's a couple of times I've traveled, but for the most part, I try to keep it around here. There's nobody like I have a friend. He'll go see Dave Matthews like.
Ten times a year.
Stuff or whatever. It's like
Crashhead.
And I'm like, I like the guy enough, but I'm not gonna. I might go see him here, but I'm not gonna go travel to see him.
But if you had the time and the finances,
sure.
What's the one band that you would travel, no matter where?
Yeah.
In the world.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, and like for me, it's like I think about like that. And then, like, what I would spend or what I had the time and all that stuff. Like, and then it's like, I think about how many other great shows I could have seen.
Yeah.
And stuff. Or, like, that's kind of what crossed me. Like, if I were to go see Dave Matthews 10 times in a summer, it's like, I think about there's 9 other great shows that I just missed.
Yeah. I mean, if you see Dave Matthews in 10 times, you're going to see the exact same set list, just in a different location.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I know they do some jam stuff where it's a little different, but it's going to be
pretty much the same format. Yeah. Right.
But I don't really know that there's anybody that I definitely would, I don't know. There's a lot of people I really like, but
yeah.
Like again, you were saying about comedy and your friends, like that's how I would much rather go see my buddies in a small bar.
Yeah.
For free or $5 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Then go pay to sit at...
I'm the exact same way. I would rather see, like, one of my friends do a 45-minute set at a dive bar like the one we're sitting in now than go see a major headliner in some big, like, arena show, which is the worst place for comedy.
Yeah, you just... I connect on it so much more on a personal level when it's something like that compared to, if you go sit out on the lawn at Riverport or whatever, you're, like, just watching the screen anyway, you can't see
it doesn't seem like unless it was
I have people talking about like if you're saying comedy and theater or arenas and stuff, and like people are talking about Louis coming to town and going to see him, and it's just like I don't know, like the guy's fine, but it's like seeing him in that arena like is not gonna
it takes away from the intimacy of a show,
right?
It takes away from the like I want to see somebody as close as I can get to them.
Sure.
I don't want to be arena like an ice rink is 200 feet across. Like I don't want to be 300 feet away from somebody watching them tell jokes. That just takes away from like everything. Now, if it was like if they could bring back like Red Fox from the dead, I would do that.
Yeah.
But that would never happen. So I prefer my comedy in a small venue.
I think the last time I did the big show like that, and that was I got it for a free ticket, so. I had nothing to lose,
How was it though? Like,
the experience wasn't. We actually got pretty good seats, so it wasn't that bad. We were still pretty close, but it was the Blue Collar,
right?
One of the last tours they did. It was Foxworthy Engvall, cable guy, and Reno Collier opened up the show.
Yeah.
No, Ron White.
What happened to Ron White? Is he,
he just wasn't on that tour. Okay. He just, but he, they did like an in the round thing, and it was so, like I said, it was cool in that, for that particular thing, but
right.
I don't know, just, yeah, comedy doesn't translate, I don't think, very well in that.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't translate like outdoors, and like unless you're like a backyard show, which are great. But like any of those, any like where there's a venue where it's the sound can has so much space to, it just doesn't work.
Right.
Even like music does not work in arenas.
Yeah.
I've been to so many horrible arena music shows because the acoustics are terrible.
Sure.
It's made for hockey. It's made for like soccer or something. It's not made for music.
They,
it needs to be in your fucking face. It doesn't need to be this expansive thing where you can travel.
Yeah. They did that, like, Oddball tour a while ago.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's in Chicago. Like, I have a couple friends of mine who did that festival. It's, but they had, like, the main stage where it's, like, you know, Chappelle or Amy Schumer doing it. But then they had, like, the better part was the side stages where you go, like, under a tent for, you know, 50, 100 people and you get to see it kind of. And that those were, like, the best shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine seeing, you know, Chappelle from... Yeah, the back of the grass or whatever.
It's like watching like a drive-in movie.
Yeah.
It takes away from the experience.
Yeah, and then like you got to think of too, like the joke timing and stuff. Like you got to like, there's like a delay on everything.
Because, Oh, yeah. Because like the sound, like I guess that, I don't know how fast sound travels, but like I guess the people in the front will get the joke before the people in the back do, and then the wave of laughter. And it just seems like, it seems very awkward to me.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
It's
not a fan of it.
Yeah.
If you want a booking for it, I will totally do an outdoor festival. I don't give a shit. Or an arena show. I'm just telling you that I don't like it personally.
Right. You said hockey. I know you got real excited with the playoffs.
Oh, yes. I would love to talk about that.
Yeah. So what you play, or are you just a huge fan? Or?
Okay. So here is my story with hockey. I got into hockey in 1993. That's when the Blues met the Hawks, the Blackhawks. In the playoffs, 93, we swept them in 4 games, and I got turned on the hockey through there, and I started playing. So when I was like maybe, 1993, I was maybe 9 or 10, I started playing, and I got obsessed with hockey very quickly. I played throughout my teen years, and I was really good, but I wasn't good enough. So when I hit, you know, 18, 19 years old, I got out of high school, I realized I wasn't going to go anywhere with hockey, so I decided to do comedy, which was my next thing I was good at. And I put hockey aside. I never like really watched or played, and until a few years ago, I got back into it. And then I missed playing. Like playing was like that was my therapy for me in a way, because like it was being on the ice or being wherever I was. It was like all my problems disappeared. So I decided back in January that my New Year's resolution would be to get back into playing hockey, either in a men's league or whatever. And I bought equipment, skates, started going to stick and pucks practices, and then. I was at Stick and Puck, and then a guy I used to work with was like, "Hey, we're putting together a 3-on-3 hockey league. Do you want to be in it?" I'm like, "Yes." So I joined a league, and I've been playing ever since. So it's been great. Yeah,
yeah. And you're a pretty diehard Blues fan, right?
Huge Blues fan, diehard. And I was the most excited, or the most happiest I've ever been, was when the Blues beat the Hawks 2 months ago in the playoffs.
Sure.
Especially being in Chicago, where everybody's a huge asshole about it.
Yeah.
It was something that I was very proud of, I was very happy with, and it will only get better.
Yeah. There was during the football playoffs, I believe.
Yeah.
Or somewhere right around there, but I remember... or maybe it was just the sun. Anyway, whatever it was. But Adam Ray was here on a weekend, and he's a huge Seahawks fan.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he told the story, but he went to whatever Hot Shots or whatever whatever sports bar or whatever it was with Sean and the guys the club. And then they, they're like getting yelled at because he's like, you know, screaming for the Seahawks and all this stuff. And it just, I don't know, it's just funny, like him, you know, he's, being very passionate about his team and
in
a city that people, nobody else cares about.
Yeah, but. People are like people. I mean, I'm very diehard about my team. People get very. It's kind of like politics. Like a lot of people get like really into their candidate. Yeah. So, but with sports, it's the same way. And I think it's fine. Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Right.
Are you a sports fan at all?
I mean, I like football probably the best. I used to play a ton of basketball when I was younger. But you know. Played for the school in like 8th grade and 9th grade and stuff, and I I guess my sophomore year, I went out for the team, and I just ended up I had to quit football, and I tried basketball, and just didn't work out either.
Yeah.
I had knee trouble and stuff. I grew like 4 inches in a month, and
Shit! And your bones didn't keep up with you.
Yeah, just had a lot of trouble growing and all that. But so anyway, I kind of fizzled out of sports. I started working more, and that was about it. Like I occasionally,
would you ever get back in like a league, like a men's beer league, just to kind of fuck around?
Sure.
Or?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of did a little bit. We used to go guys out there where I'm at. There's a bunch of guys that, like, work at GM and all this stuff, and like they'll go play at like 6 a.m. And I used to.
That's early.
Yeah, whenever I was like off of work or off of school and stuff, we used to do it. We used to do it when we were in school. Me and my buddy Sean, we like spring break or whatever. Yeah. We'd get up at 6 and we'd run up there and we'd play basketball and for 2 or 3 hours with those guys running full court games, and then we'd of course go home and go back to bed.
Yeah. It's always weird like going home. Like, well, I had like roommates and I would play hockey like super early in the morning.
Yeah.
I come home like 8 a.m. just sweaty and people are still sleeping. I'm like, fuck, I've accomplished more in a day than you people have done all.
But I was kind of involved. I did work at the Y also. I was running scoreboard for them.
Cool.
So I was kind of involved with the men's league. I didn't play in their league, but it was just kind of fun to be there and to be around it again.
Yeah.
And in that league, man, there was a. The story was Albert Pujols played in that league like his rookie year or something before. He really took off and
A men's league basketball just to fuck around. That's right. Awesome.
And then I was there one day and Jeremy Macklin with the Eagles now.
Cool.
I guess he's I think he's with the Chiefs now, but he was with the Eagles then.
Yeah.
But wide receiver, went to Mizzou and stuff, and he was here at home and he played with this team. And actually that particular week he didn't play, but he was there, and it was just like, it was kind of cool like to see the, like Macklin and, you know, whatever these guys
was playing like pickup basketball. Right, that's cool.
There was some people like that came through there. And
when you saw these guys play, were they into it, or were they kind of like more reserved and like, so they don't get hurt?
Yeah, I mean, there was obviously there was like a A league and B league kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the A league was like guys, I remember there were guys like from college, Lindenwood or whatever, different universities around here and stuff, and they were serious ball players. I mean, they were throwing, you know, alley-oop dunks to each other and stuff.
Yeah, that's intense.
In a pickup game kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then you got guys that are just there for, you know, some exercise on a Sunday.
Right.
So depends on the game, and then sometimes they would put those two teams together, and it was just embarrassing. And
there are a couple guys in the league I play in right now who are like probably my age, 30, 34, whatever, and then you know that they were great as teenagers and they almost made it, but then they didn't, and now they're super bitter, so they take their aggression out during the games, and it gets pretty rough with those guys too.
There was a guy I recall the moment crystal clear. He didn't get a call and started screaming about the ref, and he's like flopped over on the ground, and he's like throwing a temper tantrum, punching the floor, and like screaming about a call, you know, for whatever. I think he wanted to charge or whatever. Something stupid. But I'm like, this is a 40-year-old guy throwing a fit on the floor over a YMCA rec league game, and like it's just like
ridiculous. Come on,
it's just but some people get very competitive about it and take themselves a little way too seriously, I think.
Which I think is okay in a way, because like if they didn't have that, they would probably take their aggression out somewhere else.
Sure, yeah.
Which is, like, I'd rather get them get out on the ice of the court besides taking home with their families.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, man, but it's when you're not listening to Oasis and playing hockey and doing comedy, what else, Mike?
What else am I into? You know what? I am and it's hard doing this while living in Chicago, such a major city with like light pollution. But I am a huge astronomy nerd.
Okay. Yeah. So you're. I guess that's a good kind of segue to your record too, Voyager.
I am. I don't know when I got into space and astronomy. I guess when I was a kid, an old girlfriend of mine for my birthday got me a telescope for my birthday, and it was, I maybe paid $200 for it, I think she did, and I take it out in the backyard on clear nights, and I look at it's only good for, like, looking at the moon or Saturn or Jupiter, like the gas giants, like big things. But I just fall in love with the idea of outer space and the expanse of the universe and the galaxies and all that. And I want to get more into that. I want to get more into the photography aspect. I want to, because I posted a picture of the moon that I took a couple nights ago, and it got like 100 likes, which is, I mean, a lot of people like it because it's pretty, but like, it's like, oh man, I want to show people things that they don't normally see by themselves. So I've been into it, and I hope to get more into astrophotography, as they call it. Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's I don't know,
it's a whole different like universe. Yeah. It's something that people won't like. I mean, because you look at the sky and you see stars, like, oh, that's just whatever stars. Sure. But like, it's a whole, like, we're just a tiny piece of sand in a great expansive fucking beach.
Yeah,
I love it.
You take a second to think about some of that, and it just blows your mind.
You're like,
this is nuts.
I mean, everything from that to like where we came from to are there other things out there who watch us? Are there other things out there who, you know, see us through telescopes? Saying, I wonder what that is. And yeah, I like it. Yeah.
But yeah, we touched on the record there. You named your record Voyager, and you're wearing Spaceman.
Yeah, outfit. my good friend James Webb designed that cover art for me. Yeah.
That was recorded last year?
It was actually recorded I believe it was January of 2015. Okay. So last year, and it came out in October of 2015. So I recorded it, and the idea was to release the album independently. And then a good friend of mine, a comedian from Detroit, used to live in Chicago, his name is Mike Stanley. He's on Stand Up Records, which has people like David Cross, Maria Bamford, a few other people. He's like, hey, I'm on this record label. Do you want me to send your album to this guy, have him listen to it? And I'm like, yeah, fucking of course. Because I was all about like doing it independently. And then it was sent to him. The guy liked it, and he put it out. And it went well. The only problem was it wasn't originally called Voyager.
Yeah,
it was actually going to be called Idiot.
Yeah, I remember when you. I remember seeing your like flyers and stuff.
So it was going to be called Idiot, but then there's a comic named Derek Sheen. You know Derek Sheen?
I don't think so.
He's a Seattle comic, but he's also on Stand Up Records, and he recorded an album called Tiny Idiot. But he recorded his before mine, so they were like, "Listen, we don't want Tiny Idiot and Idiot on the same label because it might be, you know, confusing. Sure. So can we change the name to something else?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's fine. I don't know what they call it." And Dan, the owner of the record company, was like, hey, how about Voyager? And I was like, yeah, that's fine. And it actually ties into my love of space and all that. And he's like, well, how about we call it, we spell it Voyager, which is the French spelling, like V-O-Y-G-E-U-E-R.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, because it's a combination of voyage and voyeur. I'm like, perfect. So it came out in October, and it went to number 5 in France. The first day.
Yeah.
But the reason it went to number 5 in France, because it's the French spelling of Voyager, and when we gave them the album, they mislabeled it as poetry. So they thought they got a poetry album, so people bought it thinking it was poetry, and it wasn't poetry, and then it got, like, terrible, like, awful reviews in France, because it wasn't poetry in the least bit. But I'm proud of it, and I hope I'm going to do a second album, or a third, it'll be my third album. But I want to do my next one is going to be called Voyager 2 after the Voyager 2 spacecraft.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Even more poetry.
Yeah, even more poetry. Yeah. Yeah, I will confuse the French. I don't give a shit. I have their money. I don't care anymore.
Yeah. That's funny. Were you like the funny kid in class at all? Or
I was more of the. Troublemaker.
Yeah.
I was more the kid who caught. I mean, I was funny. Like my friends liked me because I was funny because I would say outrageous shit. But I wasn't the funniest kid in the class. I was more of the shit disturber. So I was more the kid who, when we were in grade school, sat in my class like threw spitballs, threw paper airplanes, and all that.
Right.
And I've always been like that. Even when I was a kid, I would start shit, and even as a teen, I would start shit. Even now, as an adult, I still go online and start shit with people.
Sure.
I think it's so much fun to antagonize people, to rile people up, to make them like hate me. I love being the bad guy. It's my favorite thing in the world. So I've taken that from being a kid to up in my childhood. But comedy was something that when I discovered it as an actual art form. Not just being a fucking shitty kid, you know, throwing some balls. That's when it kind of really took off for me. So, yeah, I found something in comedy that I never had before.
Did you get any Twitter feuds going or anything?
Oh, I'm always in Twitter feuds. Yeah. I'm always in Facebook fights, Twitter feuds. Oh, yeah. The latest one, and I got a lot of flack for in the comedy scene in Chicago for being a quote racist or like bigot was the day after the Orlando shooting. Well, here's the story about that. I was camping the weekend of the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting, and the Sunday, the morning of, we drove into town to go to like Walmart to buy like charcoal and like firewood and stuff. And I had my phone turned off the entire time. The entire time we were camping, I didn't want to deal with it. But when we got in the town, I go, all right, I'll turn my phone on, and my entire Facebook feed was full of like, oh, I can't believe this happened. My heart goes to Orlando. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Did research, find out what happened, who the guy was, and I said something to the effect of like Islam is a violent religion. I posted it, and then my phone died, and then for about 8 hours later, I had my phone charged. I turned it back on, and I got so much hate from people saying you're fucking racist, you're a bigot, how dare you accuse like Muslims? I'm like, it's not. I'm saying it's Islam, not Muslims, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that was the latest fight, me accusing Islam of being violent, which they are, by the way, and I will go on the record for saying that. To me, the internet is just a game. It's just a game. I love pushing buttons. I love pulling on strings. I love pissing people off. Yeah. It's really a lot of fun because I wouldn't do it if people didn't take the bait.
Right.
But people are always taking the bait. Especially comedians are the worst people in the world because comedians, for whatever reason, they are the most PC people I have ever met in my life, and it's not supposed to be like that.
Right.
Like audiences are supposed to be super PC, but it's always comedians who are like the most uptight, boring people I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
How
much do you? I mean, is there obviously in that story you sent it right out? But I mean,
yeah.
Do you ever think, I better not do that one? Like, or how are you just?
It happens. Like there are times where I'm like, I want to post this right now, but I'm afraid of like, oh, what somebody might say, etc. But I'm like, wait a minute. If I'm afraid of something might say, that means it's good.
Right.
So then I'll hit the post button and then I'll just wait for the influx. And yeah. I mean, but being it sucks being called a name like racist or sexist when you know you're not.
Right.
That just like to me that dilutes the word and I fucking love it though.
Yeah.
I think it's so great.
It is funny how many people like, you know, some picture with Obama like you know, he does this or whatever, you know, whatever the quote fact is,
right,
and
right,
stuff
right.
And like and people bite on it like that, you know, oh yeah, you know, they share it out and then so many people like just take it, you know, hook, line, and sinker. Like this is fact, you know.
Oh yeah, it's so fun.
Obviously,
it's so fun.
It's on a picture.
Yeah,
it's on the internet. It's gotta be true.
Right, totally. People take it. It's weird, like what Facebook has done because they've almost made Facebook like a mirror image of like what actually happens in the world, and it's not. It's Facebook is just like a. To me, it's a game. Like Facebook is just a game of like self promotion and. Blah 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 and antagonize like I use it to piss people off.
Right.
That's all I care about.
I got a buddy. He's right there with you. He's actually got multiple accounts because he's got blocked on a bunch of.
Same for me. Yeah. I've been blocked by, and for some reason it's always women who block me on Facebook and I don't go to people like other people's pages to post shit. I post things on my own page and wait people to influx me and I insult them there, but. For some reason, it's always women who will block me on Facebook. I don't know why. All
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think because like women are very emotional beings, so
sure
they put emotion in front of logic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a. I think that's pretty fair.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just I don't get the. Some people just take away. Life way too seriously, but yeah, like it's just like you're saying, it's fun. It's a game. It's all good time.
It's
like,
just like a video game. Just,
right.
Just if you have an idea to post something and you're thinking, man, I shouldn't post this. It'll piss people off, but it might like make some people laugh. Just post it.
Sure.
Nothing bad's gonna happen because like nothing happened. Like nothing has ever horrible happened to me for something I posted.
Right.
I always worry about it, but then nothing happens.
You do you ever think about it like with you're talking about the label or any of that kind of stuff, anybody like that, like saying, hey, Mikey, you probably shouldn't do that, or
No, I've never had. It's weird. I've never had anybody say, like, anybody above me who's in a position of power say, "Hey, you shouldn't be posting that."
Right.
I get a lot of private messages from people saying, like, "Hey, thank you for posting that because I don't have the balls to post that." Even after the Orlando shooting, I had people saying, "Hey, I'm glad you said it because I was thinking that, but I'm too afraid to say it." Like, I don't have really a dog in the fight. Yeah. I really don't have, like, anything to lose, so I will say whatever I want to say.
Sure.
Yeah, and if it rubs somebody the wrong way, then fucking so be it.
Yeah.
Like, I read shit all the time on Facebook that, like, I don't agree with, but I don't go like, "Oh, blah, blah, blah." It's just people have their opinions.
Yeah.
You have to learn that other people think differently than you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the problem is. Everybody thinks, like, if they don't think how I think, they got to be wrong.
No, like, and, like, the thing is, like, when something like a Facebook drama happens, in a week, people forget about it. And they move on to the next thing. So you might as well just be ridiculous as possible.
Yeah.
It's the only good part about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to be the other end of the spectrum with everything. I try to, you know, you talked about earlier, I share a lot of everybody else's stuff, and I just trying to promote, you know, a lot of positivity in a world of negativity.
The thing about you is you have things that you can lose. Like, you have a job. You have a full-time job. You have a wife. You have you're starting to build a family, et cetera. Like, things that you post, like, if you post something racy, that can really fuck your life up.
Yeah.
I don't have those problems.
Right.
Like, I don't have – not, like, the problems. Like, I don't have those things to, like, to really fuck things up. I don't have a job just besides comedy. I don't have a girlfriend, no kids. I can say whatever I want to say.
Yeah.
And I just – if somebody was like, "Hey, you're a racist," I'm going to say, "Go fuck yourself. You're not a racist. How dare you?"
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll look to close this thing up. And check out Mikey's records. You got two
I have two albums, of them, yes.
Yeah, on you can pick them up
on – they're on iTunes, yeah.
Yeah, iTunes and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And keep an eye. I guess they can follow you on Facebook.
You can follow me on Facebook or Twitter. My Facebook page, I think it's Facebook.com/MikeyManker. Twitter, I think, is my @ Mikey Manker. I post a lot of crazy shit, so it's not for the easily offended.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking some time out to hang out.
Of course. In. Thanks for having me.
This was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, thank you very much. Appreciate
thank you.
It. Shaking hands.
Yeah.
And we are out. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.